Radio Prague News. The Czech Republic is cautious regarding support for an intergovernmental fiscal agreement intended to save the euro. Companies that employ foreigners illegally may soon face harsh fines. And the Tibetan spiritual leader Dalai Lama is expected to arrive in Prague on Saturday for a 3-day visit. The Czech Republic has tentatively agreed to consider support for an intergovernmental fiscal agreement which would introduce a tougher debt and deficit regime for those EU members who commit to it. Eurozone leaders agreed to seal a separate treaty on fiscal union after several countries, including Britain and the Czech Republic, effectively blocked a revision of the Lisbon Treaty. The new fiscal agreement should be endorsed by all 17 Eurozone countries and any others who wish to make the commitment. The Czech Prime Minister said Prague welcomed any moves to stabilize the Eurozone, but would have to consult its parliament on making a far-reaching fiscal commitment. Sweden has also said it would have to put the matter to its parliament. Britain refused to support the deal after failing to secure concessions for itself, and Hungary has also refused to join. In Prague, President Klaus, a staunch Eurosceptic and conservative, on Friday welcomed the development, saying the EU had made a pragmatic decision and the Czech delegation had handled the matter well. Opposition leader Bohuslav Sobotka has called for a nationwide debate on the Czech Republic's stand in this matter. He said the Czech Republic was now at a crossroads where it could either support further integration or face increasing isolation. Companies in the Czech Republic that illegally employ foreigners will be fined up to 5 million crowns and will lose the right to public orders and state subsidies under an amendment to the law approved by the Senate on Friday. The amendment aims to bring Czech legislation in line with EU norms. It obliges companies to report signing on foreigners from non-EU countries and to keep copies of the employees' documents and records proving their legal workforce status. The bill is yet to be signed into law by the president. The Tibetan spiritual leader Dalai Lama is expected to arrive in Prague on Saturday for a 3-day visit at the invitation of ex-president Václav Havel and Forum 2000, of which the Dalai Lama is co-founder. The Tibetan spiritual leader will be speaking at Charles University on the subject of China and its human rights record, and he is expected to lead a debate on the search for happiness in an uncertain world. Dalai Lama is a close friend of Mr. Havel's and visits the Czech Republic fairly often. He was last here 2 years ago. The Czech inflation rate hit an 11-month high in November on rising prices of food as the central bank is debating whether to cut interest rates amid slowing economic growth. Food and non-alcoholic beverages led the price growth, rising 5.3% year-on-year, while the cost of alcohol and tobacco products rose 2.8% and transportation was up 4.4% from 2010, the Czech Statistical Office reported. The world-famous Spanish tenor José Carreras will be giving a Christmas concert at Prague's O2 Arena on Saturday. Mr. Carreras, who will perform well-known pieces such as Cantique de Noël, I'll Be Home for Christmas or Ave Maria, will be accompanied by Czech Radio's Symphony Orchestra. At a press conference in Prague on Friday, the world-famous tenor said he regretted not having more time to enjoy the city. He has performed in Prague several times, most recently in 2008. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days are expected to be overcast with rain and sleet and day temperatures between 1 and 5 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Fellinger. In today's program, the Czech Republic has delayed its decision on whether to back an intergovernmental accord aimed at saving the euro, so far agreed by 23 EU states. We'll have the latest in business news, and a little later, stay tuned for the arts. More than 10 hours of negotiations in Brussels lasting well into the early hours of Friday morning were not enough to produce agreement by all 27 EU member states to back key changes to the EU treaty, that in the face of the Eurozone debt crisis. As it stands, 23 member states, including the Eurozone countries, will instead forge ahead on their own with plans for an intergovernmental accord, this to introduce a stricter deficit and debt regime. Following the decision, here is what European Commission President José Manuel Barroso had to say.
We believe that if it is properly drafted, that will indeed increase what was our goal, increase the governance, increase the credibility, increase also the rules we have today for the euro area. I have to be very open and honest with you as always. We would have preferred, of course, an agreement, a unanimous agreement.
But it wasn't unanimous. Against are Great Britain and Hungary, while Sweden and the Czech Republic have not taken final decisions to sign on. Instead, the latter are taking a wait-and-see approach and will debate the accord eventually in their respective parliaments. There's also the possibility of a public referendum in the Czech Republic that is also being mentioned. At 5 in the morning on Friday, after emerging from the talks, here's what Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas said.
At this moment in time, I think it is absolutely premature to take a final decision. Based on the information I have, I personally would recommend a cautious approach.
The decision to tread carefully has already received praise from some quarters, namely from Czech President Václav Klaus, who on Friday called the result of the Brussels summit pragmatic, but question the wisdom of defending the euro at all costs. Certainly the time is coming for the country to take a final decision, though, either in favor of further integration and saving the eurozone and common currency, or opting out. I spoke to political analyst Jiří Pehe.
In effect, what I think is shaping up in Europe is a two-tier European Union, and that is, of course, a major challenge for a country such as the Czech Republic, because they will have to make a decision very soon.
Do you think that this was something, after all, that was expected? Many leaders warned exactly against this kind of future for Europe.
Well, I think this is something that has been expected. Very few people expected, for example, Great Britain or some other countries such as Hungary or the Czech Republic to agree with an agreement that would involve all 27 countries and at the same time would try to save at this point only the eurozone. But those countries that are not in the eurozone would still have to somehow contribute or participate in this process. So it was expected that that those countries, and especially Great Britain, will probably object to an agreement that would be concluded on the sort of pan-European level, that is all 27 countries. But at the same time, I think that it is encouraging that the leaders of the European Union, I think the leaders of the eurozone, seem to have the courage at this point to go ahead with an agreement that would involve only the eurozone countries plus those countries that are interested in entering the eurozone soon, because maybe that's the only solution at this point. And quite frankly, if Great Britain doesn't want to participate in this process, there should be a mechanism eventually which will allow those countries that want to move faster to simply leave countries like Great Britain behind. This is entirely up to London and Budapest, those countries that have doubts about this agreement. Will have to make up their mind, and they will have to decide whether they really can afford to stay outside the eurozone and outside the main decision-making process in the European Union, or whether they simply want to be part of it. And the question in the Czech Republic has never been posed in this way. I think that so far Czech politicians have been either silent or they have not been really reflecting what could happen if these various scenarios are in place.
At the same time, Jiří Pehe is critical of the accord plans. So far agreed, in his view, they are only a first step, the analyst again.
At this point, point, there was no other option, although I consider the measures proposed at the summit to be half-baked, to say the least. I think that, quite frankly, in not such a long distant future, Eurozone will have to move towards a fiscal government, a common government, simply because these sanctions will not work, especially if the Eurozone will try to sanction countries that do not live up to its deficit commitments. And given the fact that such countries would be economically already in trouble, it is very difficult to imagine that they could somehow pay or face any sanctions on top of that from the Eurozone. So I think this is just a temporary measure, more symbolic measure that is supposed to calm down the financial markets. But in the future, I think that the only solution is for further progress towards federalization and the creation of a fiscal government.
Analyst Yezi Behar there, and of course that is a story we will be following. It should be interesting to see how that one develops. Now though, I'm joined by Christian Falvey for all the very latest in business news.
The Czech economy expanded by 1.2% in the third quarter year-on-year, a drop of 0.3% compared to the preliminary estimate. Gross domestic product fell by 0.1% against the preceding quarter, while the preliminary estimate predicted stagnation. The main source of demand growth was external trade, with the rate of export growth markedly higher than that of import. On the supply side of the economy, the manufacturing industry played a major role in the year-on-year increase of gross value added. Statisticians say that the GVA volume generated by manufacturing in the third quarter of this year was almost 11% higher than a year earlier. The industry benefited from increases reached in the preceding quarters. However, it failed to achieve the level of the second quarter of 2011. GVA in total increased by 1.1% over the year, while it stagnated compared to the second quarter this year.
The Chamber of Deputies again passed a bill to introduce criminal liability for companies from 2012, overturning a presidential veto. Under the legislation, courts will be able to impose fines on companies, confiscate their assets, and even dissolve them in cases of serious offenses. The major change was initiated by the government in order to combat organized crime and corruption and to synchronize legislation with the EU and the OECD. With the Social Democrats joining the ruling coalition to pass the bill, the only real opposition it faced was President Václav Klaus, who argued that an institution could not commit a crime, only a person. Under new legislation, it will be possible to prosecute companies for almost 80 crimes, for instance, for the legalization of proceeds from criminal activities, counterfeiting, tax evasion, or unlawful possession of nuclear material.
Czech and Russian business leaders concluded contracts worth over 50 billion crowns under the approving gaze of Russian President Dmitry Medvedev and Czech President Václav Klaus on Thursday. The largest deal was for the construction of 400 kilometers of rail in the Ural Mountains, worth nearly 40 billion crowns, a contract won by the Brno-based company OHL. The Czech company Alta Invest and the Russian nuclear fuel producer Tvel established a new company called Alvel, which will be based in the Czech Republic and handle fuel cell services for the European market. Czech companies also secured three other multi-billion crown projects for the construction of fossil fuel power stations and a chemical factory. The unique opportunity to conclude so much business could not have come at a better time, according to analysts, with the Czech economy requiring more markets outside the EU.
The Czech Statistical Office reports that year-on-year inflation in the Czech Republic accelerated in November to 2.5%, up 0.2 points from October. Consumer prices increased 0.4% compared to the preceding month, with price hikes in foodstuffs, non-alcoholic drinks, and housing driving the growth. With regards to foodstuffs, sugar, coffee, and bread all saw large price increases of 35.31% and 19% respectively. While where living costs are concerned, rents increased by only 3.7%, while the price of gas grew by 18.3%. Meanwhile, the average price of diesel oil went up to 35.31 crowns per liter in November, slightly exceeding the highest ever price from June 2008. Unemployment also rose slightly in November, topping 8%, while the number of jobs decreased by 1,900.
Lastly, construction in the Czech Republic continued its decline from October, down almost one full point to 8% in November year-on-year. Analysts believe the sector is still a ways away from bottoming out and will continue to decline in 2012 with less private and public orders. The average number of employees in companies with 50 workers or more decreased in October by 8.5%. Orientation values, in fact, decreased in almost all areas of construction, particularly in regards to new construction. According to the Czech Statistical Office, the decline was led by eco-structures, the orientation value of which peaked 1 year ago due to the massive allowance of photovoltaic power stations.
Business news there with Christian Falvey. You are, of course, listening to Radio Prague, where it's time now for our main feature, The Arts, this time with Rosie Johnstone, an episode first broadcast back in 2009.
A Czech architectural landmark has provided the backdrop and, indeed, central theme of a book which has been creating a stir in the literary world. The Glass Room by Simon Moore tells the story of a modernist villa in a Czech town, from conception to construction, eventually to seizure by the state. The Glass Room has been receiving a great deal of publicity ever since it was nominated for the prestigious Man Booker Prize. Over the phone from his home in Italy, author Simon Moore voiced his bewilderment as to why his book was proving so popular in Britain at the moment.
One of the characteristics of it is that it is completely not British. I mean, it's written in English, but the only British reference to it is the Neville Chamberlain at the Munich crisis coming over on the radio. So it's not in any way British. There's no setting in Britain. It doesn't have immediate and obvious appeal in that sense. It's about an aspect of sort of cultural and social life which I wouldn't have thought was instantly, you know, appealing to the British. I mean, Central Europe, the 1930s, 1940s in Central Europe, not really the sort of time that features much in British life. So it is interesting for me, that.
I wanted to ask you how this book was born. You've written a lot about the biologist Gregor Mendel, and I know that he lived in Brno, and so I figured that this book came out of the study you'd originally done about him and his life. Is that correct?
Yes. My initial visit, the very first time I ever visited the Czech Republic, was really as a sort of interested tourist. I knew of Mendel, and I'd always been quite intrigued by his story. That's, in my case, that's the biologist talking, because I am a biologist. And so that visit sparked an interest in him. And of course, ultimately a novel, which is, I think, going to be actually published in Czech shortly, which is called Mendel's Dwarf. And having done that book, I was then commissioned by the Field Museum in Chicago, who put on a Mendel exhibition. And they commissioned me to write a companion volume to the exhibition. So that meant more visits to the area. And it was on one of those visits that I went to look at the Tugendhat House again. And it was really then when I thought to myself, there is a story here. My interest in things Czech had been growing over the previous decade, virtually, and the whole thing sort of came together in the Glass Room.
Now, I know that you have said in a foreword to the Glass Room that yes, there is a real building behind this book, and yes, there's a real town behind this book, but actually it won't shed too much light on your book if you look too much into the sort of biographical detail or the kind of historical detail. Nonetheless, can I ask a bit about how your research for, say, your biographical work on Gregor Mendel and then your research for this work of fiction, The Glass Room, differed?
Well, when I was doing the work for the Mendel book, in fact, two, because I've written a non-fiction one, the Field Museum one, of course. I was there interested in trying to get a feel for the real man. Mendel's Dwarf is a novel, and it has got Gregor Mendel's life in it, but I have taken liberties. And that's actually very important to me. I am not a biographer, and I wouldn't be happy with the restrictions that biography would place upon my writing. And, of course, that meant absolutely that when I came to write the Glass Room, the Landauer family were not the Tugendhat family. And I obviously wanted the distance. What I wanted was to feel the house. I wanted to put myself imaginatively in the place of somebody who had it designed and built and lived in it. But I didn't want in any way to write a book about the Tugendhat family. Obviously, when you're writing that sort of novel, you can't fictionalize certain events and certain dates. And obviously, both the fictional family and the real family fled the country in 1938. So there are little signposts like that. But the people themselves in the Glass Room are entirely my creation.
There's been a great deal of talk about the idea that a great deal of the books shortlisted for the Booker Prize this year were so-called historical novels. And you yourself have sort of said, actually, I don't necessarily want my novel to be seen as a historical novel in the past. Why is that? Why do you think that your novel shouldn't be termed straight out as a historical novel?
There is a completely different set of skills required and a completely different approach if you're trying to write something that takes place in the 16th century. My second novel was set in the 16th century. It's a 16th century historical novel. And I was very aware during the writing of that, so I've done it, is what I'm saying. I was very aware during the writing of that all the problems, the issues of how you make your characters sound. What do they say? What language do they use? You're trying to put yourself, and it's an almost impossible task, into the mind of people who are so distant for us that I suspect, talking rationally, you can almost say that the task is actually realistically impossible. It's a very different task to doing the same thing for the 1930s. My parents were brought up there. Their youth was in the 1930s. I spent a lot of time talking to my parents about their younger days. It's much, much closer. One knows what people sounded like and what their ideas were. So it's so much closer that I really think it's a different thing from a standard historical novel.
In both cases, in the case of your second novel and in the case of this, The Glass Room, you suggested you spent a great deal of time listening or trying to research the way that people would speak to each other. And this is something I wanted to ask you about, because you've been praised for your Czech language skills in the British media on several occasions. And from a read of your book, it does sound like you do have a command of Czech. Did you go out of your way to learn the Czech language in the run-up to writing this book? Or what's your relationship with the Czech language?
I look upon language as another thing to try and research if you're going to use it in the book, in the narrative. I spent a lot of time with Czech English dictionary going backwards and forwards, looking up a word in English to get the Czech, and then taking the Czech and going to the Czech side of the dictionary to see what other possible sort of meanings there could be, that sort of thing. And occasionally you light on something, and it's wonderful. The example that keeps coming to my mind is the use of the word pokoj for the room, which just provides that little sort of quirky thing that it's also peace and tranquility. And that's magical, because that isn't in the English.
Simon Maurer, the author of The Glass Room, featured in Today's Arts, which was written and presented by Rosie Johnston and first aired in 2009. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's program, please do so by writing to english@radio.cz. And Rosie Johnston stays with us for our final feature this day, which is another edition of Soundcheck, in which you can learn Czech through song lyrics.
Welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, Radio Prague's Czech language series, in which you can learn idioms through song lyrics. Today, we'll be listening to a tune by one of the most popular Czech bands of the decade, Činasky. The song's title is Chatra, which means the rabble, or riffraff in Czech. And the phrase to listen out for is Přesto nejede vlak. Přesto nejede vlak translates literally into English as a train can't be driven across it, and is what you say about someone when they're determined to do something or stubbornly set in their opinion. I can't think of any suitably transporty equivalents in English, but I think that when a Czech says to je její názor a přesto nejede vlak, an English speaker might say that's her opinion, which is set in stone, or that's what she thinks, and that's that. Let's have a listen to the phrase one more time. Trains, or vlaky, come up in other Czech idioms too. Czechs don't miss the boat if they want to get involved in something but it's too late. They miss the train. A Czech might reproach you because nechal sis ujet vlak, you let the train pass you by, while an English speaker would probably say you missed the boat on that one. But this is not surprising, really, when you think that the Czech Republic is about the most unseafaring country in Europe. Czechs really do like their trains, or at least as far as idioms are concerned. They naskočí v poslední chvíli do vlaku, or jump on the train at the last minute, while English speakers, somewhat more vaguely, jump on board at the last minute. And a last piece of railway trivia. If you're a scientist, say, and your research is leading you in the wrong direction, or indeed taking you nowhere, then you are na slepé koleji. The English equivalent is similar, you're on the wrong track. But it's not identical, because while English speakers are on the wrong track, Czech speakers are na slepé koleji, literally on the blind track. And that's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed your whistle-stop tour of all things train-like. But for now, nashledanou, goodbye.
Soundcheck with Rosie Johnston brings us to the end of today's program. I'm Jan Wellinger for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thanks so much for joining us this day, and take care.